Welcome to the podcast On Things Above, a weekly discussion and devotion rooted in the Word of God and reaching toward heaven above. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast On Things Above. We are now seven characters into our series from Hebrews 11, looking at the great cloud of witnesses that surround us. And today we have joining us in the study another member of our church family at Southside, Brother Jim Alverson. So welcome, and how have things been going for y'all lately during all of this?
Well, what I've found myself doing in the past 2 months is, the old story about the guy who says, "Lord, grant me patience, but I need it now." That's kind of how I felt in the past 2 months. I mentioned that I'm having to split my work between the office and home, and I'm finding out that Michelle really likes me be at home. So that's kind of a plus to all this, I suppose.
Well, we're glad you were able to join us for a little bit and study with us together. Today, we're looking at the character, the faith of Daniel. There is a phrase at the end of Hebrews 11, and similarly to what we looked at a few weeks ago with having quenched the power of fire, also within that same verse is "shut the mouths of lions," which we are attributing that to Daniel and his experience and his faith through the lion's den. So, Jim, take us over to where that story begins over in Daniel 6.
Okay, thank you. Like I said, when Bubba contacted me about this, I had some trepidation, and I started looking at Hebrews 11 and looked at the people there. And looking at the ones who had already been chosen, I said, well, that leaves me with two different groups of people, one about whom much has been written: Abraham and Sarah, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, David, Samuel. And I didn't think, well, I can't do that. That's just way too much. I can't give that justice. So the other end of the spectrum was Enoch, only five verses about him, and three of the judges, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah. Maybe I could get something there, but ultimately, after listening to Michael, I took a hint from him. And as you said, he did his podcast based upon quenched the power of fire, and the phrase preceding that is, as you said, "stop the mouths of lion." And when you see that phrase, of course, as you said, Daniel is the character that pops to mind about that. And so the account of Daniel in the lion's den is in Daniel 6, but I think we probably want to back up just a little bit into chapter 5 to set a little bit of the background for this. In chapter 5, Belshazzar is the king of the Chaldeans. He's having a big old party, and he literally sees the writing on the wall: "Many, many tekel upsarid." You've been weighed in the scales of God and found wanting, and you're going to lose the kingdom. And so later that night, the Medes and Persians attack. They kill Belshazzar, and Darius the Mede is now the king of Persia. There's been some discussion about Darius. Some people say, because they can't find any reference to him in any of the ancient Babylonian writings, that he's a fictitious character, and this whole account of Daniel and the lion's den is fictitious. But then there's others who say that Darius is just another name for Cyrus, which would make sense. But to me, it doesn't matter, because the Holy Spirit told the writer of the book of Daniel his name is Darius, and so that's good enough for me, unless you want to call him Darius, but that's another story. Beginning in chapter 6, Darius is now the king, and he is reorganizing his kingdom, and he puts Daniel and two other guys as governors over the entire kingdom. And it says in verse 3 that Daniel distinguished himself above the other governors and the satraps, so much so that Darius is thinking about putting him in charge of everything. Well, that didn't sit too well with the other two governors. And so they figured out, we got to get rid of him. And so how are we going to do it? Well, they knew that there was no way they could do it, get him on anything performance-wise, because he wasn't corrupt, he wasn't lazy, he wasn't embezzling, he wasn't insolent to the king. All these, they knew they couldn't get it on that. And that brings to I guess what my little rabbit holes is, why was he like that? Why did he distinguish himself with not only Darius, but with Nebuchadnezzar from the very beginning? And I think that goes back to him taking to heart the admonition of Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. In Daniel's case, it wasn't necessarily him finding things, but the things finding him. He was a captive. This is what the king was telling him to do. And that brings to mind, we had an elder at Southside years ago, Jim Ianson. And Jim used to have a saying, and he would say, "I work for the Lord. The pay ain't much, but the retirement's out of this world." And so I think that was the attitude that Daniel had as well. Now, there's my rabbit hole. So anyway, they realized that they could only get him on something relating to his service to God. And so they come up with a scheme. And in verse 7, we have the scheme. They go to King, "Oh, King Darius, live forever." Typical greeting. "All the governors in the kingdom and the administrators and the satraps and the counselors and the advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions." And then the hammer on that is, of course, if they don't, they go to the lion's den. Then they say, make this a law, sign it off. The law of the Medes and Persians can't be changed. So first of all, we'll see what they say to Darius. Well, first of all, they lied to him because they said, all the governors. Well, Daniel wasn't in on this. He certainly would not have been on this. He would not have been on any kind of scheme to allow anybody to worship a man or a foreign god. And so Daniel wasn't in on this. And secondly, they start throwing a little flattery at him. "We're going to worship you above all the gods and all the man." Well, that sounds pretty good if you're an egomaniac, which most of these guys were. And so then they put a little soft pressure on him. And that is, it's only for 30 days. It's temporary, you know, just this 30 days are we going to honor you above all the gods. And then after this, we'll go back to as we were. It's harmless. Well, sounded good to the king. He signs off on it. Now, what's Daniel's reaction? Well, we pick it up in verse 10. And verse 10 starts off by saying, "Now Daniel, when he knew that the writing had signed, went home." We'll stop there. What did Daniel do? I think it's more important initially to see what Daniel didn't do. First of all, he didn't try to get out of it. He didn't go to the king and say, "Look, king, I wasn't in on this. I know that the law of the Medes and Persians can't be changed, but I wasn't in on this. Maybe you could come up with an addendum to this law or something that would exclude me from this." He didn't do that. Secondly, what he didn't do was make a public display of things. Michael talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when Nebuchadnezzar told them to bow down before his idol, and they didn't. He said, "Maybe you guys didn't understand. When the music plays, you're supposed to bow down." And they said, "We're not going to do it." And they, "Well, you'll go to the fiery furnace. It doesn't matter. God will deliver us. And if he doesn't, we're still not going to do it." He didn't do that. He didn't go to the king and say, "I'm not going to do this." And thirdly, he didn't hide. And that is, picking up in verse 10, "And he went to his upper room and opened his windows toward Jerusalem and knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God." We'll stop there. He didn't hide. He could have closed his windows, but he didn't do it. He could have prayed to himself, but he didn't do it. He could have said, "Well, this is only for 30 days. I'll let it pass and then I'll pick up my stuff." He didn't do it. In fact, I think the key to that is the last phrase of verse 10. He says, the ESV says, "as he had done previously." And the New American Standard says, "as he had been doing previously." And neither one of those, I think, gives the impact of what was really happening. And I like what the New King James says about that. The New King James says, "as was his custom since early days." So I think really quickly, let's take a journey back in time to his early days. Nebuchadnezzar takes Jerusalem, and he's instructed the king, the keeper of eunuchs, to find young men to serve in his kingdom. And what do we know about these guys? Well, first of all, verse 3 tells us they're king's descendants or some of the nobles. They're the upper crust of the Jewish society. It also says they were young men. Well, we know that from the biblical standpoint, a man was considered a youth until he hit about 30. And many people think that's why Jesus began his ministry, because he was about 30 years old. But there's also another word that refers to people less than 20, and that is lad or boy. And so he's a youth, but he's not a lad. So that puts Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah all in that 20 to 30 year range. So they're youths. But not only that, they're good looking guys, kind of like Jared. They have all kinds of wisdom and possessing knowledge and their understanding and things like that. These were just the cream of the crop. And so they go into this three-year training program where they learn the language and the literature. And it doesn't say this, but the customs, and I have no doubt that they've tried to teach them the religions of the Chaldeans as well, because they changed their names. And the name changes, each one of them have some kind of connection to one of their false deities. And so here we are. The king is going to provide them his delicacies. And Daniel says, nah, I don't think so. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Now, the question is, why didn't he want to partake of the king's delicacies? There's two or three different reasons there. First of all, he just didn't want to do it because it would be somehow acquiescing to the culture. That's a possibility. Secondly, it could be that they were unclean animals. That was a possibility as well. Or they were prepared incorrectly. The Mosaic dietary laws had a prohibition against what kind of animals you could eat, but they also had a prohibition about how you prepared these things. You couldn't eat blood, for example. And another thing is that they may have been sacrificed to idols, and of course, he wasn't about to do anything like that. So they come up with this plan to eat vegetables for 10 days and drink water, and at the end of it, they are fatter and better off than the rest of the guys. And so at the end of the three-year period, Nebuchadnezzar calls these guys before him, and he says in verse 19 of chapter 1, then the king interviewed them, and among them none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. In all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than magicians and the astrologers. So these guys were sharp guys. Now, back to chapter 6. The guys who had plotted against him go to the king and say, King, didn't you have this particular edict? And he said, yeah, we had it. And he says, well, what is it about Daniel? And I like, in verse 13 of chapter 6, I like the way they describe Daniel, because it says a lot about Daniel's character. They said, so they answered the king and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show regard for you. You can just hear the contempt in their voice. Now, why were they able to call him Daniel, that captive from Judah? Because in all the time he had been there, he had never assimilated into the Chaldean culture. How old was Daniel? Well, he was 20 to 30 when they took him away. The Babylonian captivity has ended now of 70 years. It's been at least 3 years of training and things like that. Daniel's somewhere 95 to 100 years old. And so when it says, as was his custom from early days, he's been doing this for 100 years. And so after 100 years, these guys say he's still that captive from Judah, because he never assimilated into the Chaldean culture. So
wow.
The king is upset because Daniel's got to go to the lion's den. And it's the king who's trying to find a way out for him, if you look at verse 14. And finally, he can't. And he says, Daniel, sorry, you got to go to the lion's den. And I like what, again, in verse 16, as he's sending Daniel to the lion's den, it says, but the king spoke to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. How did he know that? Because Daniel told him. Daniel had been talking to the king about God, and he told him how God was in charge of things, and nothing on earth happens without God's knowledge. And he and Darius knew God would take care of him. And so verse 17 ends with them rolling a stone over the lion's den.
And I love how you brought out the idea of Daniel having this lifelong faith. That was something that stood out to me, the consistency that he has, how this was his custom from early days. And going back to chapter one, when he's offered the delicacies of the king, it says there that he resolved, or I can't remember which version it is, but maybe it's the ESV that says Daniel made up his mind.
Yeah.
So from this early age, he made up his mind that he would seek the Lord no matter what. And I think that's such a great way to think about faith and to think about how we set our mind on things above, making up your mind that you will trust in him and follow after him, even if that means giving up the pleasures of this world, and even if that means facing the den of lions. And Peter picks up that idea in the New Testament, and he uses this story in an analogy to describe the enemy that we face on a daily basis and the faith that we have to overcome it. So, Bubba, let's go over to 1 Peter 5.
All right. Thank you, Jarrett. Jim, I have trouble imagining you facing this with trepidation because you're one of my favorite Bible class teachers, and you're a great student to have in Bible class because you're always prepared. And today has been no exception to that.
Well, thank you, Bubba. I do pretty well when I have notes to read off of, but extemporaneously, I'm not too sure about something sometimes.
Well, in the New American Standard Bible, next to Shut the Mouths of Lions, not only does it have Daniel 6, but it has Judges 14 and verse 6 with Samson, and 1 Samuel 17 with David. And so we have to imagine that this was a culture where they were used to lions being around, and lions were a danger to them. Lions threatened them, and they had to defend themselves from lions. And so we look at our world today, and I didn't go out and check the mail, worried that a lion was going to come jump out of the bushes somewhere. And so we may have trouble relating to that danger until we come to 1 Peter 5, where Peter identifies the lion that is in our world, and that is the devil. He said in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." So as Daniel had his enemies making accusations against him, our enemy is Satan, the accuser. Our lion is the adversary, the devil. And he's powerful. He's on the prowl. This world is his den. It's dark and dangerous. And so we have to be on the alert. But as we, like Daniel, trust in God, the Lord assures us that if we resist the devil, he will flee from us. That when God is on our side, he will protect us and shut the lion's mouth and deliver us from the dangers of our adversary. So even though we're in a much different world than Daniel, we're fighting the same enemy and trusting in the same God to deliver us from the mouth of the lion.
You alluded there to James chapter 4, where he writes about how if we resist the devil, he'll flee from us. And sometimes I think we can get into a mode of thinking that our temptations, our enemy, is just too difficult to overcome, too powerful. And we even talk that way sometimes. We'll say, you know, I'll just never be able to overcome this temptation. I'll never get through this. It's too much. But I think that's where this verse from 1 Peter 5 and in James 4 and the whole story of Daniel gives us so much hope that if we put our faith in the Lord, if we resist the devil, God will shut the mouths of lions. And not only that, the devil will flee from us. He'll run away. And I know that's getting ahead a little bit in the story. So, Jim, let's jump back to Daniel chapter 6 and finish out the story there.
Okay. Well, Daniel goes down to the lion's den. And the king cannot sleep that night because he's worried about Daniel. Morning comes, and he runs down to the lion's pit, and he says, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" And Daniel says, "O king, live forever." God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouth so they have not hurt me, because I have found innocent before him, and also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. God sent the angel to close the mouth of the lion. I remember when I was a kid in Bible study classes, and we were talking about Daniel and the lion's den, and they had some kind of an illustration that goes with it, and that usually had somebody in their 40s or so standing among the lions. And well, again, Daniel's probably close to 100 years old at this time, rather than 40 years old. And so he says, God took care of it for me. And so the king is very glad that it happened, of course. And in kind of a retribution to these other two governors, he takes them and their families and feeds them to the lions. So the lions had a feast that day. And then he comes up in verse 25, and he says, then King Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. Now, Darius is worshiper of false gods. How does he know this? Because Daniel talked to him about it. How does he know that God is in control? Daniel talked to him about it. And if you look at what he's talking about here, the living God, steadfast forever, his kingdom is one which shall not be. Daniel's telling him about the Messiah to come and the God's kingdom to be set up after the sacrifice. His dominion shall endure forever. Daniel's telling him about the Messiah to come. And Darius understands it. And understands that God is much, much, much more powerful than anything that he's ever run into before. I would touch just briefly on the idea of the lions. We are not going to be sent to the lion's den in our lives. But David, in some of his psalms, did have his metaphorical lions around him. In Psalm 7, he starts off by saying, oh, Lord my God, I knew I'd put my trust. Save me from those who would persecute me and deliver me, lest they tear me like a lion, rending me in pieces, and none dare to deliver me. And then over in chapter 10, again, he has a litany of things that people are against him. And he says, they sit lurking in places in the villages and secret places. They murder the innocent. He crouches down, lies low. He's helpless, faltering. He's all these people who are out after him. And then again, in Psalm 17, he talks about they lie like a lion, eager to tear his prey. But immediately after each one of them, the next phrase is this: arise, O Lord, in your anger, lift yourself up because of the rage of my enemies. And in chapter 10, he says, arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand. And in chapter 17, he says, I gotta find 17 verse. He says, arise, O Lord, confront him and cast him down. He's saying the same thing that Daniel said. God took care of this for me. And I'm relying upon God to deliver me from, in Daniel's case, the true lions. And in our case, our metaphorical lions.
We sometimes think of Daniel's story ending here in chapter 6. But there are actually 6 more chapters to Daniel. And at the end of the book, in chapter 12, there's something interesting about the faith of Daniel. So let's turn there and look at the last part of Daniel's story.
Well, it is really a book of 2 sections. We're much more familiar with the first 6 chapters of Daniel than we are 7 through 12. In the first 6 chapters, Daniel is seen as one who has been given the ability from God to interpret dreams and visions, and these are given to kings. But in the last 6 chapters, the visions are given directly to Daniel, and they are visions of death and destruction and distress. In fact, chapter 12 and verse 1, the angel says there will be a time of distress. And this causes Daniel great discomfort because he sees not only what's going to happen in the future, but what's going to happen to his people, to God's nation. And so in verse 8, he asks this question, "My Lord, what will be the outcome of these events?" And I think that expresses what many of us are feeling right now. What is going to be the end of this coronavirus? How is it going to affect us, not just in the coming days and months, but years from now? What will be the outcome of these events? And I want us to take comfort in what was told to the prophet Daniel in verse 13. "As for you, go your way to the end. Then you will enter into rest and rise again for your allotted portion at the end of the age." Daniel, some very distressing things are going to come on God's people. And it's been decided. Even Jesus would speak of the abomination of desolation spoken through Daniel the prophet in Matthew 24. But Daniel, go your way. Go do exactly what you've been doing, serving the Lord and shining your light. And you will enter rest. You will not physically see these things happen in your lifetime, but you will rise again and receive your reward. And so for those of us who are distressed at this time, wondering what will be the outcome, hear the word of the Lord say, go your way. Go be the person God wants you to be. Go shine your light and do your best. And then you too will have rest and rise again to your reward.
When we read the story of Daniel, it's always amazing to see how closely he foreshadows the coming of Christ. Just like Daniel, Jesus was accused by jealous leaders. He was reluctantly condemned by the king or governor, then given over to be brutally executed, and the stone was fixed at the entrance to the den or tomb and sealed with that official signet. And just like Daniel, it's even the exact wording. There was a very early morning visit to the tomb. And just as God sent his angel to shut the mouths of lions for Daniel, God sent his angel again to open the mouth of death itself and roll away the stone. So because Daniel rose up out of the den of lions, we have confidence that God will see us through any trial that may come. And because Jesus rose up from the tomb, we have confidence that at the end of all of life's tests, we too will overcome the ultimate trial of death and be raised up and seated with Christ in the heavenly places. So Jim, thanks again for studying with us, and thanks for the great insights and study in the faith of Daniel. Do we know who's on next time yet?
Yes, we've got Lawrence Kelly, and he has chosen Jacob. So that should be a very interesting study with LK.
All right. Well, we look forward to next episode with Brother Lawrence Kelly on the faith of Jacob. Thanks, everyone.